It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. There is a fantasy that hundreds of millions of us each year indulge in. We buy lottery tickets.
Numbers could change your life.
We have 23.
Because if you didn't have to worry about money,
I just won $250,000.
You could do everything you always wanted to do. Be the person you were meant to be.
I just won $250,000.
I think everyone plays the lottery in the hope that it could be them that wins. It feels like it's going to be amazing.
Matt Pitcher is a financial advisor, and he has heard this many, many times.
So I run a wealth management firm in Hampshire, here in the UK, and we specialize in dealing with people who suddenly get money.
Yes, for the past 20 years, Matt has advised people who have actually won the lottery in the UK. It's a service actually set up by the lotto company. They put the new winner in touch with a financial advisor.
Yeah, that's right. So they give their winner 2 weeks to kind of go on that emotional roller coaster. And at the end of the 2 weeks, they'd bring them into an office and sit them down with myself and a lawyer to go through perhaps all the things to bring them back down to earth.
And you know that old saying, be careful what you wish for?
Everyone's got a vision of what it's like to win the lottery in their head when they're playing. The reality, of course, is very different.
The world feels particularly chaotic right now, and it can make you wonder how much of your future is in the hands of luck, circumstance, or people who don't care what your plans are. When do you and don't you have agency? Well, today on the show, ideas about seizing what's in your control and making the most of what you have. Which brings us back to Matt Pitcher. Over his career, Matt saw how the literal luck of the draw, winning the lottery, prompted people to do what they'd always wanted to. And for some folks, this was very straightforward, like the guy who bought the car of his dreams.
Out of all of the winners I ever met, he had the clearest vision of what he wanted. He was after a lime green Lamborghini and somewhere to house it. But he wanted to house it where he was, build a house where he could live with the car. And actually, he lived over the car. So the car had the ground floor, he had the first floor, and he could look through. He had a little window in the floor, and he could sit in an armchair and look through at the car.
The winner didn't have a driver's license and had no plans to get one. He just wanted the car. But for other people, deciding what to do with the typical win of about £1 million was more complicated.
Every winner was completely different in their reaction and where they got to. Some people were, by the time they came in, they'd kind of processed it already. Some people were very, very far back on their emotional journey. They were still in turmoil. And in some cases, we had people come in with family members, and just the maelstrom of emotion in the room when you've got children who don't know if they're going to receive some of the win, but they're in the same room talking about what the plan is with the win. You know, so many different reactions from different winners over the years.
Two-thirds of adults in the UK play the lottery at least once a year.
Matt Pitcher continues from the TED stage.
That's over 36 million of us. Nothing else really unites us in those kind of numbers. So we must be doing it because we want to win, right? Because we think that that money is going to change our lives for the better. Well, let me take you back several years. It's a boiling hot summer's day, and I'm sat in an office with broken air conditioning. I have very unwisely chosen to wear a dark suit, and I can feel sweat starting to run down my tight shirt collar. Sat opposite me is the most miserable man I have ever met. This man has just won the lottery.
In your talk, you describe meeting a man, a winner, who actually didn't feel lucky at all. Can you take me back to that meeting? What was the story he told you?
Yeah, so that was probably the toughest meeting I ever had. When I started advising lottery winners, You'd very often go into your local corner shop where you'd probably bought your ticket in the first place, and you would ask the person behind the counter to actually check your ticket for you, the person who you probably see every day for a pint of milk and a, you know, a loaf of bread. And the problem with that, in a small community, in a village community, it always leaks out that you've won the lottery. And in his case, it had, and it had quickly, you know. And so within 2 weeks, he had been approached by neighbours, by family members, asking for a share of the winnings. And this was a community they'd lived in for years. They loved the community. They were about to retire. And by the time actually he met with me, he and his wife had decided that the only way they could cope with the pressure they were under now was to move out of the area that they were living in.
It brought out the ugly side, it sounds like, of some people around him.
Yeah, absolutely. And broke relationships for him, which were ones that he valued. I think the key point for him and his wife was that they financially, they were about to get to the point where everything was right, where they'd done all of the things that we tell people to do. They saved into the pension, the expenditure was under control, mortgage was paid off. They were ready for that next stage of life financially. They'd done all the right things. And then actually this injection of money just completely destabilized their situation.
Do you think they had regrets that they played the lottery at all?
Yeah, I mean, so it sounds odd to say, and I know it's hard to have sympathy for someone in this kind of situation, but yes, yeah, he absolutely did, because it disrupted his life, and it was a life that he was very happy with. And actually, I don't know if he knew how happy he was with his life until his life was disrupted by the win. The one positive that they took away from it was that when they did rebuild, they rebuilt with purpose, knowing what was important.
Yeah, because I think we have these visions of being like our true selves, if only financially we would be set free in some ways. But you've learned it's not that simple.
It makes you reflect on your own life and where you're seeing value and purpose in your own life. Because actually, for a lot of these winners, they end up realizing, not necessarily immediately, but over time, they end up realizing that a lot of the things that are truly important to them are things that they could have achieved without the money if they'd have just focused on what it was that mattered. You know, things which actually, well, most of us have been gifted with anyway, without a lottery win. And I'm reminded of that every day.
Did you ever have to coach people to decide which thing to spend their money on? Because as you say, like, it's a lot of money, £1 million, but it's not like everyone could quit their jobs, buy a huge house, travel the world. There have to be some choices, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. We did have to do that quite a lot. There's a very famous winner in the UK who won 10 million when he was 19, and he spent that money within 10 years. By the time he was 29, he was back in a sort of a minimum wage job.
He's
pretty well known because the tabloid newspapers in the UK followed him for the whole of the 10 years whilst he was spending the money very visibly, very publicly.
On what? How do you blow through that?
On his favourite football club, on cars. Again, cars are often
cars.
A very good way of getting rid of money quickly. on houses, failed business ventures, you name it. You know, he did it. And actually now he says he doesn't regret anything about those 10 years and that he's glad the money ran out because he's not sure he'd be alive if he'd have won any more, given what he was doing to his body. But yeah, we did have to coach people. So I had a couple, young couple in their early 20s who didn't own a home and who loved going on holiday, and they wanted to buy a house that would be the forever house, so the family home in the countryside. But they also had the dream of having nice holidays every year. And unfortunately, mathematically, they couldn't have both. Mm. And so I spent a long time coaching them to accept the property, which is the one they went for. They went for that family home. They bought it. And unfortunately, as the years went on, the holiday budget just crept up and crept up. And what was left of the winnings slowly shrunk and shrunk until I think by the time they're in their early 30s, about 10 years, they'd actually run out of the money to pay for the nicer holidays. Now that is, I mean, again, it's, you know, maybe for the audience it's difficult to be too sympathetic, but for them that's really hard, because in your 20s, if you've had a decade of going on very nice holidays, you've then probably got another, what, 50, 60 years where you're not going to be going on nice holidays anymore. And you've got used to it for a decade. So that is tough.
That's my lesson to my kids. Don't upgrade, because once you do, it's hard to go back.
Yes, it's very hard to go back, always.
Are there questions that you give people? Do you tell them, you know, ask yourself this? Come back after you've given it some thought.
Yeah, so a really good one, actually, is to think about when you've been your happiest. And then think about, well, what was the essence of what I was enjoying about that moment? Because actually you can pursue those moments. And very often when you get people to answer that question, they won't say, oh, it was when I bought a house or bought a car or got a pay rise or a promotion. They'll say, well, it was, well, inevitably, it's very often, it was when I was spending time with someone else. They'll tell you a memory they've got of a time with someone else that was enjoyable, that was full of love or passion or just happiness, joyfulness. And actually, you can replicate those moments for free, frankly. That doesn't need money. Money can help you to work less, to create a bit of time to be able to pursue those moments and that happiness. But that's all it boils down to.
Yeah.
If you speak with people towards the end of life, and particularly if you ask about regrets, they will always say, I regret not spending enough time with friends, not spending enough time with my loved ones, spending too much time in work. You know, it's the consistent same things over and over again for those that are in long-term care or hospice care. And it's the same with the winners. Once they realise that they haven't got so many financial limits on their ambitions anymore, they suddenly realise that actually buying lots of things is not going to bring them any long-term pleasure.
When we come back, the lotto winner who made the most of every cent, and how you can too, even if you don't hit the jackpot. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. Stay with us. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, ideas about agency, when we can take control of our lives and when we can't. So we were just talking to financial advisor Matt Pitcher, who has worked with lottery winners to help them manage their money. And he has seen firsthand how money was not the shortcut to fulfilling their dreams.
A lottery win isn't going to give you that if you are not already in a place where you understand what you're passionate about or where your values lie. It isn't. It's just going to make you a wealthier version of you today. So if you're a really deeply unhappy person, you just become a wealthier, deeply unhappy person. It isn't a fix. Money is not a fix. It's a tool that we can use to make things better for ourselves. But you've got to understand that point first.
So our last winner for today is the one that has stuck with me the most vividly over the years. They were a young couple who worked full-time to support their young family. They didn't want to spend it on an exotic car, but actually planned to spend half of the win on their home, and they gave up their jobs and lived on the other half. 18 months later, well, they had blown through the entire fortune. They had to return to their jobs and their old lives pre-win. But actually, this one isn't a cautionary tale. In this case, what I haven't told you is they had a young son who was severely disabled and needed round-the-clock care.
They spent the money adapting their home to make their son's life more comfortable with his disability. And then the second thing they did with the money was just pop it in the bank account. And he gave up work and lived on the cash that they had left over from the win. And, you know, the money went in that 18 months. They burnt through it very, very quickly. But their son was so ill that he actually died at the end of the 18-month period. And dad went back to work pretty much straight away. And for me, it was the best investment that I've ever seen anyone make, an investment in time. Yeah. You know, again, it always comes back to time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He had time with his son for the final 18 months of his life. And that's something that without that win, they never would have achieved.
The element of chance in all of this, for good or pain, you know, the chance that their son was born with this eventually fatal disability, the chance that there was that they won the lottery, just it's life is very much out of our hands in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if the win had happened 18 months, 2 years later, it would have been of no use whatsoever to that particular family. And potentially, if it had happened earlier in their lives, actually, it may not have had such a profound impact on them. It came along at exactly the right time. And it was amazing to just be a part of that, even for that brief snapshot that I was involved.
So as we look forward to this new year, for many, many people, it's a financial look. It's, you know, I want to get out of debt, or I want to finally make enough to go on that vacation, or get a job where I, well, get a job. For a lot of people, it's a tough market out there. As a financial planner who has seen people in these extraordinary circumstances, is there any advice you can give to our listeners as to maybe a mindset or this idea of like where they can have agency and where maybe they can't? I don't know.
Yeah, look, so I think it's important for all of us to start from an assumption that we're not going to win the lottery. So let's deal with what's in front of us. Often a useful exercise is to think, okay, well, if I'm sat here next year and I'm reflecting back on the year I've just had, what would have made me feel like that's a meaningful year, a year well lived? I think it's important first and foremost to plan out and be intentional with the experiences and the people that we're going to spend time with. And if you want to have some financial goals as well layered on top, great. But don't start with those. That may sound odd from a financial planner, but start with the time goals first of all. The time is the thing that we're all given as a budget. And that is a budget that a lot of us spend very, very freely on nonsense like scrolling on our phones, frankly. Look, I've not lived a perfectly calm and meditative life as a result of dealing with lottery winners. I don't know anyone who has. But it has taught me to try and, wherever possible, achieve a balance. So a balance with the time that I give to my family, the time I give to work, and the time I give to friends. I'm perhaps a little bit more planned out than some of my friends when it comes to making sure.
I would hope so.
It's that time planning, isn't it? Yeah. I think it's the intentionality. I tend to be the one who will proactively contact friends to just carve out a bit of time to spend in relationship with them, maybe more so than the other way around.
That was Matt Pitcher. He's the founder and managing partner of Altor Wealth Management. You can see his full talk at TED.com.